Hi everyone, welcome back to the Pathfinder 101 podcast. Today's interview is with Mr. John Langbert. He is a partner at Plush Suites. Apologies for the audio quality of this interview. This was recorded like in person as opposed to via Zoom, so there's some background like construction noise going on. So without further ado.
I'd like to take you back to your high school days when you're thinking about college, career, etc. I'm assuming that you were in a similar situation to me or Henry, with a bit of confusion and uncertainty in choosing exactly what you wanted to do. And after a few years, you have a successful business today. So I'm sure you learned a lot during this journey and just trying to find out what you learned in that journey.
Well, you probably won't like what I have to say, which is I was clueless. I wouldn't say I was in a fog, but I certainly was unaware of many career paths. I just kind of knew from my family history that I would wind up as some sort of entrepreneur, business owner, didn't know what. But both sides of my family were entrepreneurs, and I had grown up listening to my father especially talk about how much he disliked ever working for other people, both in his 4 years in the Air Force and every job he ever had. He, as quickly as possible, had his own business and was much happier with that. And go back to my grandparents, the same thing. My grandfather, my mother's side, was a pharmacist. He owned his own pharmacy and then went into the pill wholesaling business for whatever reason and did very well with that. Father's side of the family, his father was in the family business with my father. Prior to that, had his own company it was called Head House, so portable toilets. Not a glamorous business. But there are many non-glamorous businesses out there where you can make a pretty good living. And you go back even generations beyond that. They were always masons and all sorts of construction-related things, which is kind of funny how I wound up now on a construction project. So I didn't know what I was going to do. I just was good at math, so I just ended up heading off to go get an engineering degree and applied to Cornell. Early decision, and I can't even tell you why Cornell, because in retrospect, like the last place I would want to be would be upstate New York in the winters. Of course, you don't get the summer. There you go off and do other things. I just was clueless. I looked at a few other schools, Harvey Mudd, and only because they came after me. I was so flattered that anybody expressed any interest in me with some handwritten letters from, a teacher or something. I don't know how they found me. But I ended up at UT because it was free. That's what my parents said was economically sensible. So I look back on it and I'm kind of embarrassed how little thought I put into the process. I don't know if I'm really answering your question, but I didn't really look at different career paths. I just kind of assumed it would take care of itself.
So how did you overcome like the doubts or hesitation you experienced along this journey? As you said, like a lot of it was just what your family had done in the past or what you thought would be nice, but not with much experience. So how do you overcome that doubts?
That's a good question. And you have, you probably have even more concerns when you're an entrepreneur because you are ultimately responsible for everything. And if things go south, I probably would have taken different courses. I would have taken different courses and been more diligent making sure I remember things. College and high school, a lot of what you do is just getting through the test, through the final, getting the grade. Within minutes, you've forgotten the stuff. I wish I could go back, and particularly on the classes that interested me, and really done a little bit more memorization of the concepts and develop more relationships with the professors and teachers. I really liked put a little bit less effort, emphasis on getting the highest grade possible in every class, which is what I did in in college just by memorizing enough to get to the test. It really avoided, another thing that I didn't do was research who the teachers were. Absolutely, I would have taken classes based on the professor and less on the subject. When I got to business school, I finally learned that, and I did a really good job picking great teachers in interesting classes. So I did wise up, but I wished I'd done that earlier.
Do you think it was more important in college, like the skills you learned, than actual knowledge, like in classes?
I didn't even know for this week.
Oh, college was all about just getting. I think you want to accomplish two things in college. One is getting a great looking transcript so you can get that first job, a really good employer. You want to start as high on the ladder as possible when you're developing your career. But the second thing is actually learning things that you can use on the job. Business classes are pretty good about that. So you want to be able to rap about net present value and IRR and that kind of stuff if you're a finance major. And I used that in my first real job. And it helped me. I went to EDS, Electronic Data Systems, was my first real job out of college. And I excelled at that job because I knew financial concepts and was able to make some business proposals in the area where I was working, which were far beyond what my boss could do because they didn't have those concepts down. So you absolutely need to learn that tactical stuff that you can find on the job. But that's a small percentage of what you're actually going to be tested on while you're in college. You're going to be taking electives, which is really just to make you more well-rounded. One class I loved at UT was an English class solely on sonnets. That's all it was, 14-line poems. Understanding them, the cadence, and all the, I forget, the iambic pentameters of the world, sort of thing. And if I've written three sonnets since taking that class, I'm probably overstating it. That was a cool thing. It makes you a little more well-rounded. But unfortunately, there's a lot of detritus in school. And it's okay to forget that stuff. Stuff you'll never use. I'm not sure I'm answering your questions, though.
Oh, that's good.
Is there any field you would have explored other than construction? Or?
Well, I never explored construction. I fell into that later in life. I guess there are two, everything's two being made today. You can go the professional path if you want to be a doctor. You can pre-med and you learn all these things for many years and you go off and make a career in engineering or something like that. You can start like, math classes and eventually you say, I want to be a civil engineer, whatever that engineer, electrical engineer you want to be, and you pursue that and you get into that field. And then the more general ones, the business. Social studies sorts of courses you go off and do pretty much anything. It's not a particular career path that you're taking. It's really just personal preference. I do interviewing for Harvard. I've been doing that since 2003. And you have a lot of folks that are pretty determined that they're going to go this engineering route or this doctor route or the legal route. And then you have people that do go to that also, I guess it's kind of like that. But I actually enjoy the interviews generally more with generalists. You want to take a wide swath of courses and they're not dedicated to one and plan their career out in high school, which you can do that, but you generally your parents are pretty strict, I think, if you follow that path. They're a little too pliable. They're too directable by their folks. And they're just oftentimes not that interesting. I really enjoy the folks. They follow whatever interests them. And again, I'm just meandering off of your questions.
Did you have anyone on your like path to what you're doing now that was like a really good mentor, someone that influenced you a lot?
Let's see, my first boss out of business school was actually my first boss in business school. I worked a summer at Resorts International, which was a casino company in New York City. And he was a really smart, diligent guy, Wharton grad, and we're still friends to this day. I actually just saw him out in Vegas last month. He was a mentor to me, just like the little ways. Sometimes mentors do little things. and I remember this, he wrote me one time, I had some project that went really well, and he wrote me a note, he had a little note card, and he'd handwritten a note, and then it was sent over to me through the intercompany mail. I still have that card today. That's, I learned a valuable lesson from him, which was to pay attention and recognize folks and spend a little time doing it, just like a little car. So I've always been pretty good about that. I made my kids write thank you notes throughout life, and nothing makes me happier than when I see them do it unprompted. So you learn little business skills from mentors like that. I've not had a mentor who gave me career guidance on where I should take the next step, and I probably suffered for that. I kind of wish, maybe in retrospect, there's an answer to one of your earlier questions, if I could do something differently. I wouldn't have mind asked it. I would have benefited had I found a mentor or two or three who were more successful to listen to along the way instead of following that kind of shiny object path I did when I went into the casino business. I love casinos. When I turned 21, that's right when I was in Vegas, and I enjoyed the math behind it, and I enjoyed the social aspect and the challenge of trying to make money. Wound up very quickly as a poker player, because that's the one you have the best chance of making money in. You just have to overcome the house edge and be that much better than your opponents. Whereas mathematically, you're never going to win in any other, unless you're counting cards, and that's kind of tedious. And I followed that for a while, and I was in the gaming business, did really well with it, and that was probably the best part of my career, from Resorts International to Capital Gaming, which was a startup company I ran in the gaming division, and then I had my own video poker business in South Carolina for a few years. That was just absolutely tonning. That was a home run. Loved that business. Then the Outlaw Video Poker in South Carolina. So that was the first big turn, twisted turn in my career, was I had to find something new to do. And in retrospect, I probably should have just gone to Vegas and stayed in the gaming business. I was doing really well, and certainly built up a very credible resume there, but instead, wound up in New York with a couple friends of mine from business school, starting an internet company, and then the internet crash came, sold the internet company, and then I had something new to do. By then I had triplets, infants at home, came back to Dallas, raised them here, had my own finance company for a long time. That's when Carter went to St. Mark's, beginning in fifth grade. That's when we had the two-generation thing. The girls went to Hockaday, and I ended up opting for the single parent route, since the kids were all two, almost three, I was a single dad. And so instead of chasing the money, I stayed with the kids and had my own small business, but I never really became that 80-hour week guy that you have to be if you want to make a lot of money. There's nobody working 25 hours a week who's a billionaire, self-made.
Were there any best decisions you think you made for your career path?
Or on the other hand, worst decisions?
On the other hand, what?
Worst decisions.
Oh, it's easy to come up with bad decisions. Those are glaring. But I just pointed one out. I think not sticking with something that I already enjoyed, and instead going off and doing something just because of a couple friends, and it was cool, really cool back in the late 90s. I think one decision I made that was really good was to put the kids first and being dad first over chasing money. Because as you get older, you realize I'm surrounded by people who have so much money. You know, when you go to Harvard Business School, you are in a pool of people that are predestined for success. Almost all going to do well. And you just can't spend it. I mean, once you make them a reasonable amount of money, he said, they make so much money. So what? I mean, they accumulate it, they give it away, they pass it on, they spoil their kids. Their kids don't turn out any better than Topaz kids. The fact that some of them have other issues, they get a little bit snobby because they come from these rich families. So I like the decision to not chase the money. And certainly, had I gone to Wall Street or the options trading business, which was something I looked at, could be a lot more money, but I don't think I would have been as happy. I'm very lucky. The kids, the fact that they wanted me to move to Boston, which is what I did back in February, while they're all in school up there, that really
no, we're not looking back. I got my heart. Canceled that about a week and a half ago.
Not a lot of families are like that.
But we still have
money comes and goes.
Will you please confirm we got our
course
schedule
happy,
like 200 plus yards on Monday?
Despite being surrounded by so many guys with so much money. That being said, some of my best friends.
Correct.
And,
yep. So we're still go for that one. Cool.
You know, I'm happy for them.
We don't need anything tomorrow. But thank you.
I'm more happy when they build a business because they are creating opportunities for people and mentoring people. Those are the folks that impress me, not just the guys that have the most economists in the network. To answer your question on good and bad decisions, you just got to accept that you're going to make good and bad decisions. I don't want to come across like so many of these graduation speakers who are all going to say the same thing. Chase your passions. Sins of commission are much better than sins of omission. In other words, try it. So what if you fail? You can agree with that stuff, but there are a million books and speakers out there that tell you that stuff, so I don't parrot it. Although it does happen to be true in a lot of cases, not a lot of cases.
What do you enjoy most about your work or what you've done in the past?
Just quickly before we tackle that question, could you just go over what a typical day or a week looks like for you?
Sure. Well, in building a hotel, my responsibility is, as one of two owners, is the overall project. So I try and keep a view from the 20,000 feet, so to speak. A lot of times it's firefighting. If somebody drops something as an injury, make sure that all the paperwork is done and taken care of, make decisions. Basically, my week is making decisions, honestly, make choices. At a certain point, you get decision fatigue, but it's putting the right people in the right places. Sitting over here is Kurt, who's the best hire we've made on this project.
Thank you.
By far. But my week is very varied, so it could be everything from these steel guys trying to figure out, let's say we're short on steel, place an order late, scrambling to figure out where we can get steel, or looking down the road, at some point we're going to not just be an equity funded project, we're going to bring some debt on here. Leverage is important to get your returns up. So at some point I've got to start thinking about putting a loan package together for a bank. A lot goes into that. Or on the side, I'm on a board at an insurance company, so I might have a board meeting that's coming up, or I may need to prepare for that. You talk to the other board members prior to that. I have a partner in this business, and we talk every day. Sometimes for 2 minutes just to touch base, other times for 2 hours, where we're thinking about things in advance on the rooms, on how we're going to market the hotel, things that might back into construction decisions. So again, I'm not doing a detailed answer to your question, but really my week is a variety, and it's an important thing to get the work done that's on in front of you, but also keep an eye on the long term and spend some time thinking about where you want your project to be a year or two down the road. That stuff is very easy to not work on. It's just like in school. If you don't wait, if you wait till the end to do these long-term projects, your project sucks. It's forcing yourself to take that first step 3 months before the end of the semester or trimester. You got to switch to semester
sometimes.
When you get those larger projects, and that's more important in college, and it'd be really important at work. Can't just work on the stuff that's firefighting. You have to force yourself to be unavailable for a few hours regularly on those long-term projects. That's where the real value is created.
Okay, so now we can move on to what you enjoy the most. Your work and what you've done.
Well, in construction, it's very easy. Taking people on a tour, I enjoy that. I enjoy talking about the project. I think what I enjoy most is anytime I get to think. So, in designing a hotel, a lot of thought goes into, well, we want to have only king beds. We want to have a mix of king and two queens, two doubles. Well, what's our customer going to be like? Who are we actually aiming for? In the case of our project, we have a straw man set up. Our target customer is the divorced dad, the guy who splits with his wife, has to leave home. She keeps the furniture and the kids, and he's off. What does he do?
Okay.
He comes to flush. So we're constantly trying to put ourselves in that guy's head. Well, what's my life like? Am I going to go out to eat every meal? Well, at some point I'm going to want to stay. It'll be in my place, my apartment here, or my room. I'm going to want to do some cooking. Do I bake? Do I microwave? Do I just need a skillet? Do I want to do it socially? Do I want to move around? Do I want to shoot myers? You know, we ask all those questions. Like, what food am I going to have? How much food am I going to have? We got to figure out how big the pantry is going to be. Do I use ice? Do I need an ice maker? Well, the ice maker going to be noisy at night because it's too close to the bed. Maybe I just want to have those little things where you fill the water yourself. So there are countless thousands, and I really enjoy that aspect of the business, the room design. I enjoy learning new things.
Cool. Thank you.
Unfortunately, I forget them. For example, in the casino business, I used to know so much stuff. Nowadays, even when I go into casino, I know a lot about this stuff. I really enjoyed the learning process. You're going to ask me to see what I don't enjoy about my career? Is that the next question? what I don't enjoy is when you have to work with people who are stupid or misguided or on a power trip or any sort of negative attribute. It just makes your life unbearable. So that's why I would advise folks to try and avoid jobs that are surrounded by people that are just assholes. So, for example, government. A lot of things that the government will do, these guys are a power trip, so you just don't want to be in a government red tape business. A lot of legal career. I just can't understand why somebody wants to do stuff. You're surrounded by hostility. Or being surrounded by just boredom. I don't know why there's so many intellectual property attorneys. Who is interested in this stuff? This is the grind of going up against the government to get patents through and then litigating patents. Why would you choose a career like that?
My dad's
gonna be like, I feel sorry for you.
He does more like defense of big companies and small people trying to like steal it.
Well, I've met a few IP attorneys along. And they're actually, so one of them's in my book club. She's really nice. She's always off at North Texas is an IP hotspot for a number of reasons. So she's always fighting off somewhere, researching the patent and fighting over whether it's legitimate or not. To me, it's tedious. I'm a father, but when I talk to them about their job, actually, that's a good way you can judge. Also, another thing is if somebody tells you their job and then you're immediately bored and you want to get away from them, that's not a career you want. That's actually one of the things about the casino business that's really cool. When I was in the casino business and people would ask me what I did for a living, I told them I'm the director of slot marketing at resorts. For example, I moved up the ladder pretty quickly there. I was the youngest director in the history of the company. So I was director of slot marketing. People have questions. Oh, are the slot machines rigged? They have like a million questions they want to ask you about the casino business. Or when I was, I managed their, not frequent guest, but we called it a star card. So we were the first casino to launch a frequent gaming program, essentially, and you put the card in. Track it and give them rewards and comps, as they call it in business. People have a million questions about that. That's fun. You want to be in a business if you want to ask about it or talk about it. Construction is kind of like that. I assume you guys like to tour.
Yeah.
And there's a lot to talk about. It's an interesting kind of business. but there are quite a few careers nobody wants to hear about.
Yeah, my uncle, he owns like a company that's like data management for petroleum engineering companies. It takes him like 5 minutes to explain what exactly this company does.
So it's necessary, but you guys are the start of your careers. Why would you choose something that you're then committed to years of people not wanting to talk to you at parties?
So how important would you say networking is for your job? And what steps do you take to stay ahead of the industry?
I hate these multi-part questions because I start on one part of the question and I never get to the next part. Networking is absolutely critical in pretty much anything you do, any career you choose, because it will create opportunities for you. If you worked, say, at IBM, and you're a data scientist, and you sit in a cubicle all day long, and you do your work, you're rewarded for that work. But your network's going to be very small versus somebody that has an outward-facing career where they talk to lots of different people. So the IBM data scientist will never really become an entrepreneur because what opportunities will present themselves to them? They're going to spend their 40 to 60 hours a week in a cube with a computer. They're not going to learn about, this company here is hiring, or that company there is looking for, somebody here is looking for a partner, or some new thing is happening. They might get robbed because a recruiter finds them and they'll get moved to another cubicle at a different place and get more money. But that's not really creating an opportunity. You got to mix and mingle. Your network has to be not just deep in your career area, it has to be broad in different career areas, different types of people. So that is one thing I'm pretty happy with, is my network is both deep and broad. My relationships, I really work to keep in touch with people. So I'll digress. When I travel, I never stay in a hotel. Absolutely never. I always find somebody in that town that I know. The alumni website at HBS is amazing. So I just punch in a city, and it will bring up a list of everybody, alums from the school in my year in that city, and I can always talk to them. Or you do it graphically too. They have a map feature, and you can see the lights. So, for example, I'm driving to Boston, leaving this afternoon, and before I headed out, looked on the map along I-40 and whatever the rest of the route is up there, looking for dots, and then I mouse over and I can see people. I know a lot of these people, and so I don't have any problem calling them. Say, hey, I'll be passing through Tuesday afternoon. You around? Or I'll be there Wednesday night. Mind if I crash on your sofa? Nobody says no. Everybody's flattered that you want to spend time with them, and they like hanging out. But it's hard to ask. My kids, the three of them, I just don't get this. The generation, the iPhone generation, they can't talk to somebody. They got to text them. They're almost ashamed to text people now. They can't ask for anything. So they're really damaging their networks by being unwilling to ask for something, to ask if they can hang out or do something with somebody. So networks are absolutely critical, and your job that you choose, your career path that you choose, will impact your ability to create those networks. I forgot even part of one of the question. That's something to do with networks.
Yeah, it's sort of a segue to the next question, which is, what steps do you take to stay ahead of the industry?
Oh, I don't. I'm so busy doing the work. I don't know how when you stay ahead of the industry. I mean, I keep my eyes open for what hotels are doing, and I always, I don't stay in hotels very often, as you know from that prior comment, but my partner does. Or when I travel in places where there aren't alums, like I got a trip coming up to Australia, I'm staying with friends in Tokyo, but then I'm going to Kuala Lumpur and Bali for a few days. There aren't any HBS alums there to stay, so I'll stay in the hotels and I'll tear those rooms apart inch by inch, figuring out what are great ideas and bad ideas that I can steal. As far as construction goes, You just have to let the subcontractors come up with the means and methods a lot of times. On the steel, which we're self-performing on, I kind of rely on the guys out there coming up with better ideas on how to do things. Sometimes you just don't. You do things inefficiently and you waste money. But don't dwell on it. There's no reason to beat yourself up. Take your losses and move on. Learn. Don't repeat your mistakes. I'm a stoic, in case you couldn't tell. Mm-hmm. So I kind of stick with that philosophy.
So what types of like business skills or just generic skills aside from networking or being able to communicate well do you think are crucial to your career right now?
Oh, there are a few. Let's see. We have a Langer family motto I brought the kids up with when they were very young, which was just because somebody says something doesn't make it true. So that has you go take that sentence in a few different directions, but I think the best business skill out there is listening and being able to parse ask good questions, figure things out where exactly the truth is. Everybody's got an agenda, so we talk to people. They're not necessarily immediately lying. Some element of prevarication, trying to steer you in this direction or that direction. And a lot of people have opinions that they act like they're facts. So you need to be able to analyze that stuff and figure out where the truth is. You have to be able to ask good questions and take the conversation in the direction to get to what it is you're trying to accomplish. Because people will be throwing up, gorillas throwing up dust, I forget what that saying is. People are always trying to steer you in different directions. So it's the analytical skills, being able to tear through the BS. That's the skill that matters. Read the question again, because I don't went off on a tangent.
It was, what types of business skills or generic skills are crucial to your career right now?
Yeah, it's I guess I was answering that. It's the analytic skills, the ability to operate a particular formula or find the derivative of something, probably not going to help you so much in business. So it's figuring out how to solve the problem. You can math. It's how you set up the problem. Asking the right questions so that you can answer the question and get to it. You know, a lot of stuff that goes on, even on a construction site, if you can operate basic geometry, you can solve problems. A lot of people can't do that. It's funny, when we interview folks, we ask them a math question. And it's less about getting the correct answer immediately, although it's really nice when they do. It's more about how do they get to the answer? Or are they sure of themselves with the answer? A lot of people are unsure. They ask, and they'll ask, who wants me to ask them a question? The two of you.
Yes, wait.
Okay, Henry. What's 12 times 15?
180.
You just did it. You were unsure of yourself there, right?
12.
Yeah. So, you need to be sure of yourself. You need to be able to come up with the answer and say, yeah, it's 180. You knew what the answer was, but you didn't present yourself that way. So, but how did you come up with the answer?
12 times 10 and 12 times 5. Yeah.
Perfect. That is the logical way to do it. Do you know how many people do 12 times 12 and then 3 times 12 or 15? And they're off. They don't get the answer.
It's a fun question.
Because people can't add 144 and 36 in their head. It's not easy to do. And then I give people pencil and paper a lot of the time. They still can't come up with the answer. These are adults, grown adults with college degrees, sometimes applying for pretty high-level jobs. My partner has a publicly traded company. I help him hire CFOs regularly because I'm pretty good at writing Indeed ads and screening folks and doing interviews. And I help him out that way. So these are people applying for a $200,000 job with stock options for a publicly traded company. Cannot do that question. They struggle.
That's great.
Or they get the wrong answer, sort of thing. So I think the analysis part of anything is really what you need. It's less about the particulars. You're not going to remember, like in biology, the different levels, phylum, and all that stuff. That that stuff. Even the acronym. The only acronym I ever use is RAVEN. You learn that one in English?
I haven't heard it.
It's for the word effect. So, if it's AFFECT, that's a verb. A verb, RAVEN, or E noun, if it's EFFECT. That's about the only acronym I remember from all those cheat sheets that I had, or cheat things that I had to study before to get through a test. But RAVEN's a useful one.
So there's the statement, follow your passion, that everyone throws around. And I think most people don't believe you should follow it completely, but what's your take on it, and what role do you think passion should play in choosing a career?
I would look at it retrospectively. When you try something, if you enjoyed it, you want to do it again, that's your passion. If you try something and you didn't like it, then don't do it again. So the lesson is, don't make the judgment in up front as to what your passion is. Try lots of things and discover what your passion is. At your age and in college, you have all sorts of opportunities to try new things. So don't put yourself on a path headed into college. Just try lots of different things, and then you'll find paths to go on. That being said, there are some folks that the passion comes out after a lot of time getting good at something. It creates a different type of passion, a depth, a pride in being an expert at something. That's, to me, less common. I think the folks that are a little more freewheeling and just trying lots of different things will find that they're happier than the folks that are, like I said, the ones I interview who are already planning on becoming oncologists, pediatric oncologists. Hello, you're 18 years old. You've already decided to become a pediatric oncologist. Even if you accomplish it, I mean, you're not interested. You've already made your so many, cut off so many branches from the tree, you're already headed straight to the top. And that's not going to be an interesting person. I don't think they're going to be truly happy. They may be successful, and they make their parents proud because they can say that their daughter is a pediatric oncologist. But that's not the way to lead your life. Your job is not to make your parents happy or proud or able to brag about you. There are three exceptions to that, and those are my kids. But other than that, you know, just wing it, try different things. Find your passion later. Don't try and find it now or define it now.
So how would you define success in your field or profession? Because you've been talking about, like, it's not always about the money. So how would you define
The building not falling down would be one marker. I think it's in my business, which is really to get a hotel open and successful, it would be pretty easy, which is, when the hotel opens, does it fill up, and do people want to stay and come back to the point where it's profitable enough to where you can grow your business? So growth for growth's sake isn't necessarily a good thing, but if you grow organically because you're providing something that's a good or service that people are willing to pay up for, that you can make money at, and that's the ultimate marker for an entrepreneur, is their business growing profitably. That's how I would define this project here. If it opens and is doing well to where I can open more of them, that's success. People won't admit it, but recognition is also a form of success. If magazines come and want to write about you, or people are blogging about you, or your name is showing up in higher rankings in whatever industry thing you're at, it's no different than sports. If your team is ranked higher, if you win the SBC, it's whatever. You know, sports are really good at that, about making sure that you know exactly where you stand. There are other ways of doing that in business, oftentimes. Even poker players, they have rankings for tournament winnings. Then you can go find pretty much any poker player will be in the rankings, and they want to move up the ladder. You have to be careful of that, though, because when you're chasing a ranking, or in the case of money, if you're chasing more and more money, there's almost always somebody higher on the list. You're like, where are you trying to get? All right, Elon Musk, okay, there's nobody richer than him. Got it. That leaves a lot of people who aren't the richest person in the world trying to scramble up the ladder, who aren't going to make it. Same with politicians. You can get elected to some low-level office, but there's really only one president. And the likelihood there's going to be any of the three of us, pretty much zero. So do you really want to keep trying to move up the ladder for the sake of moving up the ladder? I think that's a waste. I gave up on that a long time ago.
How have you had to navigate like changes in profession and new technology and social media in the past couple decades?
Well, first I had to learn to type with my fingers when I had a BlackBerry. And then when I got good at that, I had to be willing to give that up for the touch screen, which I switched to, and then switched to swipe. And now voice is what I prefer to use. It's not so good. So in terms of navigating it, it's really just that scale or that wave you always hear about. They're the innovators, early adopters. What's the next group in the middle? And they're the Luddites down at the rest of the other end of the scale. I think it's good to be an early adopter and try stuff out. You don't want to be that innovator. They always pay way too much for the first item that comes out. You got to wait just a little bit, make sure it doesn't kill anybody, but then try out those new technologies. Some of these folks, including like my business partner here, he's just constantly whining about technology, and it almost becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy that nothing works for him because he's trying to prove that it doesn't work. He barely can use Zoom. And you make yourself look silly when you whine about progress. You gotta try stuff out. I mean, in terms of navigating it, if it works, great. If it doesn't work, be willing to scrap it and go back to the old system. But you know, there's a whole reason why. When was the last time you used carbon paper? Never. How about a typewriter? How about a phone with a rotary dial? Have you even seen one of those?
My grandparents.
You gotta move on, but sometimes these people look silly. Like my parents. They have a landline. Oh my God. I get it. You're in your 80s, but please.
One here.
Yeah, it's free. Came with our internet service, and it was cheaper if we let them give us a landline than if we just had the internet alone. That's how desperate Spectrum is to try and show that they have landlines.
Wow.
Some genius, I'm sure, in marketing came up with that. How many calls have we made with our landline? Like I said, in the casino business, I launched that program, technology. And boy, it was great. I mean, the program was great, real winner. And like I was talking about, I got written up in a gaming magazine in Atlantic City, an industry rag that I got a nice article in. And I enjoyed that, but we made this like glitch in the programming. And there was some sort of, I didn't cash because I didn't write the code on the cashback part of the program, where somebody somehow got the computer rounded, and it rounded to -$0.01. I don't know how it happened, but it then allowed the customer to pull out an amount of money, and then their cashback balance, instead of going, stopping them from taking out, it just went increasingly to a negative number, and they could keep taking money out, and this balance would go negative. You're supposed to always have a positive or zero balance.
Yeah.
But there was a glitch, and when the two customers exploited that, and then we've caught, how did they get this cash back? And then we found the problem and fixed it. But it was a little glitch. You know, if we hadn't launched the program, we wouldn't have had that risk, but instead we lost $500,000, $500 or $1,000, I forget what it was, to these two customers. We then asked to return the money, and they said, oh no, that we were entitled to that. I think there's, you know, people are, there are a lot of people out there who, they're not stand-up individuals. They're gonna take advantage of any opportunity. I'm sure you see that in your spam folder, those types of folks. But try and avoid them. When somebody shows you their colors and they're not honest, block them. I don't know if I can not stay involved with people like that. There's so many people in the world you just don't need to get involved with crooks and assholes. It's kind of like
yeah. So, do you have any final comments before we wrap up? Any advice for high schoolers that are considering what sort of profession they want to pursue in the future?
Well, my recommendation to my kids would be the same one I would give to you guys, which is if there's something you really enjoy, go ahead and make that your major. But find, if you can, a minor or a double major, something to make you a more interesting person that allows you to kind of fish around. I really like Brown for my son because that school has a lot of flexibility in the schedule. And he didn't get in, but that would have been a good pick for him. I'm sure you're going to hear the same advice from all these interviews about not becoming too narrow in your interests. But it really is good advice. Don't make your decisions early. So try and be a well-rounded person. That being said, you're only going to get 4 years of undergrad. And that's it. It's a small part of your life. So take advantage of that. Don't work in college if you don't have to. And don't do the remote class thing. Don't try and graduate early. That's just stupid. Why people graduate early? It's just beyond me. Don't do that. Do a semester abroad. Absolutely. Or a summer abroad. Something that gets you out of this country to where you can see some other part of the world. And don't go to London. Yeah. Really? That's not abroad. That's spoiled. Go do something. My son's going to India to work this summer. And, he did a gap year in high school. I sent him to Mexico. He lived in Cuernavaca. He was fluent Spanish. Those were good decisions on both my part and his part. Obviously, he had to agree to go. So take advantage of those opportunities. You guys are marksmen. You're spoiled. You're going to have all sorts of abilities to do these things that a lot of people don't. And then why wouldn't you? A couple of the reasons not to. They're all lame.
Well, thank you for taking time to address these questions.
Thanks to everyone who's listening for choosing to spend your time with this podcast. I really appreciate it. Please be sure to check out Pathfinder101.com for more information like this. And thank you, and have a great rest of your day.